UTC wants to merge with Raytheon. Some say moving the UTC headquarters out of Connecticut isn't that big of a deal. Others, though, say it's a bad sign of the times. Welcome to The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. Glad you can be part of our discussion today. And if you really want to join in, how about emailing us? We're at tfs@wshu.org, or you can find us on Twitter. We're at Full Story WSHU. So today and tomorrow, we're going to talk business in Connecticut. For years, business leaders have complained about problems regarding transportation, housing, taxes, young people going elsewhere, cities not being attractive enough, and a lot more. Then the other week, UTC said it wants to merge with Raytheon and have the corporate headquarters in the Boston region. Now, some say that sounds smart from a business perspective. And it's only 100 jobs or so that will be leaving the Nutmeg State. Others say, this is a sign of the times. And what it's doing is it's sending all the wrong signals. Our friend Dan Haar is with us. Dan writes for Hearst Connecticut Media. He's been covering this story. So, Dan, thanks for being with us. Is this a big deal that they may move out?
It's a big deal. It's not necessarily a calamity. I think we have to take a middle path. We can't sugarcoat it and say, well, you know, it's only 100 jobs and we keep 18,000 jobs. I think it's 18 and not 19. The number 19 is out there. On the other hand, we can't say the sky is falling because UTC has, quote, left any more than GE, quote, left. GE took 300 jobs out of headquarters. And as I think we've discussed on this show, the major loss with respect to GE was from the breakup of GE Capital, which cost Connecticut 3,000 jobs. Similarly, if Pratt & Whitney stays in Connecticut, we are going to be okay with UTC and Raytheon Technologies. So it's a middle path.
Now, Dan, the Lamont administration, the people there say that cities need to be rebuilt, to be made attractive. It sounds great, but shouldn't this have been done back in the 80s and 90s? It takes decades to rebuild.
Yeah, I think what we're talking about is the type of vibrancy that comes from a sort of a creative foment rather than a city that has X population or Y amenities. You want a sense of creative energy, and that's what I think Connecticut has suffered from not having enough of over the decades. And that's what, when we say build cities, we're not necessarily talking about sheer population growth, although David Layman, the Economic Development Commissioner of Connecticut, is talking about great population growth in New Haven. But there have to be these sort of creative ways of thinking that attract people. And that's really what we're talking about.
I was reading that in your column the other day, and he had told you that he wants to increase, I believe, double the size of New Haven over the next few years. I think it's around, what, 145,000 people now?
Well, it's a little bit less than that.
Okay.
And he's talking about bringing it up to the 200,000s. And in his view, if you grow by just 3.5% a year after 20 years, you've doubled. And so you may have to correct my math on that. But the point is, we're not talking about overnight. We're talking about decades. And if you have a modest, consistent growth over decades, the problem is that we've had negative growth to zero growth over the past two decades. So we're talking about reversing that and bringing in, let's even say more modestly, 2% a year. So 2% a year would be, let's say, 22,000, 2,500 people. Well, in Hartford, which I know very well, over the last 12 years through the state quasi-public agency, Connecticut has brought in about 2,000 to 3,000 people in apartments. So building growth in cities is not easy. And so you're talking really about a catalyst that has people coming in. I don't think you need to double the size of New Haven's population in order to make New Haven into a destination city. If you look, for example, in Stamford, I'm in the city of Stamford right now talking to people about an event that's happening this Monday from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Avon Theater Film Center, a biofashion tech summit. There are people in Stamford who have been encamped at the town center mall doing biofashion, that is, biosustainable techniques for making clothing, right? So this is a workshop, and they're having a summit about that. That's an urban thing. That's something that we're going to, you know, there need to be lots of things like this. So it's not a matter of let's build more houses and more neighborhoods and people will come. It's a matter of let's make this the type of environment in New Haven and Stamford and Hartford that attracts people because of this creative foment. And I think that's easier said than done. It's a building block. And yes, the fundamental principle that we're talking about here, the economic principle that we're talking about, is that in the past, in our fathers and our grandfathers and our grandmothers and our mother's generation, people followed jobs. If the factory was in East Hartford, they came from Maine, they came from New Brunswick, they came from the South to build jet engines in East Hartford, Connecticut. Jobs now follow people. Companies go where people want to be. Unfortunately for Connecticut, over the last two decades, more people have wanted to be in big, cool cities than in comfortable suburbs. That may reverse itself. There's an economist who works for the state who thinks that we're going the wrong way. We need to just stay the course because suburbia is going to become popular again. These are the types of things we're thinking about. The other clash that's happening is building cities is expensive. Just those 3,000 apartments in Hartford has cost about $60 to $100 million, depending on how you count it. The other thing we can do is cut costs and make Connecticut cheap again relative to New York and Boston. It's a little bit cheaper, but not relatively as much as it used to be. And so that's the Republican view of it. And so you have these two clashing ideologies, and you can't do a middle ground. You can't do a little of one and a little of the other. And that's why Connecticut is at the moment stuck ideologically, and that's where we need to get unstuck.
Dan, what are the Republicans saying about the proposed merger?
Well, what they're saying is that this is a sign, and that's not all. It's not an ideological difference. Let's just say that there's a pessimistic view that says when UTC moves its headquarters and becomes Raytheon Technology in Greater Boston, over time, not overnight, as we saw with last week's announcement about the additional jobs and the Otis elevator headquarters, but over time, Connecticut becomes less and less important to the company, and migration of jobs happens to other places, as is natural, and Connecticut will lose its great job base of United Technologies. That's the pessimistic side. The optimistic side is that Connecticut does what it has to do to remain viable, strong, and a magnet for these manufacturing, advanced manufacturing jobs, right? You understand that jet engines is not the same thing as stamping out, you know, screws and widgets. It's highly technical, and that's what they do. You don't go to Middletown and see a massive assembly line operation there is an assembly line, but it's not with lots and lots of people and all that stuff. So it's modern manufacturing, and Connecticut is very good at that. And the optimistic view is we're going to stay good at that, and there's going to be no reason for them to leave.
Dan, the proposed merger stayed under the radar, and they kept it pretty hidden until the moment of announcement. Are you hearing anything about any other future plans from any other Connecticut companies?
No, and if I did, I would be breaking the law, I guess, or somebody would be by telling me. The idea that there's criticism of the governor for, quote, not being on top of this is reflects a lack of understanding about SEC securities law, right? The number of people who knew about this prior to the Wall Street Journal breaking it two Saturdays ago would have been, you know, in the low dozens. Right. In other words, the people who absolutely positively were in on the deal and had to make it happen. And so this is normal. These things happen. And you know, tomorrow Eversource could merge with Avangrid and become one big that could be happening. They could be meeting today. Torgerson could be meeting with whatever his name is, who's the head of Eversource, and they could be merging. And we could have one giant utility for all of New England. We don't know.
And finally, I know transportation tolls is still on the docket for Connecticut and talking about the special session for that. And Ned Lamont has said one of the very first things that needs to be done to attract business to our state is to fix the roads, fix the rails, fix public transportation. Is this going to give added weight to that argument?
Well, it absolutely gives added weight because it took me, you know, 2 hours to get to Stanford today. And as you know, you live down here. There's no easy way to get around, and that's a problem economically. The question is how and whether tolls solve that problem, because just having tolls doesn't solve the problem of congestion. And so it's a multifaceted problem. We're going to hear more about it tomorrow, apparently, at the Capitol. There's some kind of a discussion on what the tolls are going to be, a little bit more detail, and so we'll have a little bit more detail. My understanding is that the votes will be in place for tolls, but that it's going to have to be something of a lesser, not quite as big a plan.
With the 30 seconds that we have left, will this proposed merger go through? And if so, when will it happen?
There are two roadblocks. The answer is, I would say at this point, it's likely for the middle of 2020, you know, a little bit less than a year from now. But I would say there are two roadblocks. One is the Pentagon saying, no, we don't want one massive giant supplier for all our technology needs. And the other being, as you may have read, there's a shareholder backlash because, you know, look, these mergers are good for the most part for upper management. That's who likes to do mergers. Right. Employees don't benefit. Rank and file employees, communities don't benefit. The customer may or may not benefit. And that's part of the question. And the shareholders, you know, in about half these deals, they lose a lot of money. And in about half of them, they do really well. Stanley Black & Decker has been fabulous. Other mergers, not so good. The bottom line is I would give it a more than 50% chance of passing, but not a slam dunk.
Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media, talking with us today from Stanford. Thank you, Dan.
Great to be here. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you. You too. If you'd like to join in the conversation, it's easy to do. Email us, tfs@wshu.org. We're on Twitter @FullStoryWSHU. This is The Full Story on WSHU. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back. It's The Full Story on WSHU. We're continuing our program about the business climate in Connecticut and what some are thinking after the news that Farmington-headquartered UTC proposed to merge with Raytheon. The new corporate headquarters would be in the Boston region, and 100 or so executives would leave Connecticut. Some who are worried about the business climate in the state point to GE leaving for Boston back in 2017, and they say this latest news is indicative of a poor business climate. Jim Smith is back with us. Jim Smith is the former head of Webster Bank, was the co-chair of the Connecticut Commission on Fiscal Stability and Economic Growth, and is now co-chair of the Connecticut Economic Resource Center. Basically, he and others are trying to help Governor Lamont build a good business climate in Connecticut. Mr. Smith, as always, we appreciate your time, sir. How are you?
I'm good, Ron. Thank you. I'm delighted to be with you again.
Jim, what's your take on the proposed merger?
I think that we've got to be careful not to rush to judgment because there's a lot of moving parts here. UTC and Raytheon had been talking for about a year. There's lots of things that go into a merger, including where the headquarters is going to be, who's going to be the CEO, where's the who's going to be on the board of directors, how the business is going to be managed. So first I want to say that what Greg Hayes and UTC have done is really extraordinary. They have now built the second largest defense contractor in the world. Very, very impressive what they have achieved. And so somewhere in those negotiations, it was decided that the headquarters would be located outside of Boston, while at the same time, UTC and Pratt & Whitney would be absolutely instrumental to the success of the combined entity, such that they're willing to commit that they'll add at least 1,000 employees over the next several years to Pratt & Whitney here in Connecticut, where they have almost 20,000 people working today. They're one of the primary contributors to the high-level technological state that we have and to the productivity levels that we have. So I think we have to be excited about that and try to keep things in perspective. And at the same time, the fact that Otis, which is being spun from UTC, has also committed to having its headquarters here and to adding people at its main office, those are good signs.
Now, I'm sure you've heard the criticisms and concerns, especially from some in the Republican Party. Len Fasano, the Senate minority leader, said, "I think it's as big as losing GE because it's losing a name brand. The optic is really bad. This is a new governor going on an old path." What do you think about that?
I think that it is a new governor, but as I said, these conversations have been going on for a long time. And I'm trying to remain objective about, you know, what actually occurred here, while at the same time recognizing we have extraordinary opportunity to improve our capabilities at business development, including retention and expansion and recruitment in Connecticut. And that's what Indra Nooyi and I are working on.
Okay, so what are you doing right now to change the situation? You and I have spoken before. You've been very candid that Connecticut needs to make some major changes to correct the sins of the past. And we're talking about going back decades. If you could wave an economic wand, what would be the first change that you would make?
Well, it's the changes actually are being made in the area where I'm involved. The new CERC, as we call it, that's Connecticut Economic Resources Center, is really it's a creative strategic repurposing of an existing organization that advances Governor Lamont's vision for economic growth and job creation in Connecticut. So I think that other things aside, if we had done a better job of nurturing our businesses, understanding what our natural strengths are, investing in them, making sure that we're developing the workforce of the future, that would put us in good stead. I think there's perhaps up to 1% of growth rate in state GDP that is available to us through managing our business activities better. So the CERC is going to morph into a business-driven not-for-profit that works closely with the governor and the ECD to ramp up our business development activities. Our resources will be augmented through state and private sector funding and redirected to focus intensely on business retention, expansion, and recruitment. And very importantly, marketing the state will become a primary role. You know, for all the positives that we have here, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about what our problems are. And I don't want to ignore the negative, but I think we need to accentuate the positive. I say to my friends, you know, go home tonight and tell your spouse or your partner, what are the three or four really positive things that you want to say about Connecticut? Is it that we're in the top decile in healthcare, in education, in environment, in crime, innovation, entrepreneurship, quality of life, top five across the country? Let's remember what our strengths are and build on those strengths.
Mm. Now, speaking about trying to be positive, the governor has said that the cities need to be rebuilt, make them more attractive to businesses and entrepreneurs. Is that the way to go? And I ask that with this in mind. It takes a lot to rebuild cities. Is Connecticut finally ready to make that commitment?
I think Governor Lamont has some big long-term ideas, and rebuilding our cities is a big assignment. It starts with making sure you have workforce opportunities in those cities, that businesses want to locate there, that they are millennial-friendly. By the way, New Milford and New Haven voted number one millennial-friendly area in the entire country within the last 3 or 4 months. You've got to make them walkable. You have to listen to young people and make changes. Some of them are relatively small, and some of them are big and take a generation or more to achieve. All of it revolves around transportation. I can get to and from, and logistically I can get around in a city, as well as connect to the suburban areas as well. A huge part of this is about talent acquisition and talent development and making sure the companies like UTC and Pratt, Otis, and others are able to draw from a workforce that is being developed here in the state instead of either locating people elsewhere or having to try to attract people from other locations. If we do a better job of mining and improving our assets, our natural strengths, we will grow again.
Hmm. And finally, if I can, I keep hearing more and more about public-private partnerships across the board in all facets of government. Is that going to happen? Do you see that accelerating over the next few years?
Well, I absolutely do, and I think that's the way to go. And one of the things that Governor Lamont does really well is that he understands relationship value. He brings people together in a way that we haven't seen in a very long time. Actually, CERC and DECD are working together a public-private partnership. So you have the state agency, which then is going to downstream a lot of its business development activities into the new CERC. CERC will be the tip of the spear for the state of Connecticut, working with its industry clusters, finding out what the business needs are, and then reporting back to Governor Lamont and DECD. And one of the organizational changes that was made here is that David Lehman, who's the commissioner of DECD, is on the board at CERC. He is also the senior economic advisor to the governor. So he's in the governor's office, and he is what I call a leader among his peers across state agencies, whether it be DOT or DOL or DEEP, all of whom, Indra and I think, ought to have business development goals and metrics. so that the head of DECD has more influence than has occurred in the past. So that is a public-private partnership that will work well to stimulate economic growth.
Jim Smith, the former head of Webster Bank, was the co-chair of the Connecticut Commission on Fiscal Stability and Economic Growth and is now co-chair of the Connecticut Economic Resource Center. Mr. Smith, we always appreciate your time. Thank you, sir.
Ron, it's great to be with you again. I'll look forward to the next time.
And we're going to get another perspective now. We've heard from Dan Haar, Jim Smith. Let's find out what the CBIA thinks. The Connecticut Business and Industry Association is the largest business association in the state. And Eric Getty is vice president for government affairs. Eric, welcome back. Thanks for your time today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
So, Eric, you've had some time to ponder the proposed merger. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think a number of the things that Jim Smith, you know, who is an excellent businessman, a very bright guy, really, you know, really admire a lot of what he has done for the state. I think a lot of what he said is right. You know, we don't necessarily want to rush to judgment on just the UTC deal alone. But, you know, what I've seen in the media the last couple of days is, you know, we're starting to become Connecticut's starting to become the significant presence state where some of our key industries or key companies are moving out, but promising they're going to keep a significant presence here. And that's a little bit disturbing because when your corporate headquarters moves, you do tend to focus in that new area where you've moved to for a lot of the philanthropy that is done. So that's a little bit alarming. But beyond just UTC, we're seeing some alarming trends regarding other businesses, some of smaller businesses, and the number of business closings that we're getting. In fact, just this past year, we had 8,000 businesses closed in this state or terminated. That's a 52% increase over the year before that, while only 1,000 new businesses started. You know, we cannot continue on that trend. We need to take a look at Connecticut and what we are doing, particularly to small businesses. If groups like CERC and Jim Smith and some of the other economic development entities in the state are going to be successful in attracting new businesses here, we need to get the legislature to do a better job helping them out and not creating so many negatives so that we can accentuate the positive things about Connecticut.
It sounds like you agree with the minority leader, Len Fasano, the senator. He says it's bad optics for Connecticut. Is he right?
I don't think it's good optics whenever you have a significant, excellent corporate citizen like UTC decide to move their headquarters. And again, there's probably many business reasons for it. It just doesn't look good optics-wise, as I suppose the senator said. But again, that's just one business. We got to look at all of the businesses in the state. And I'm more worried, especially after this last legislative session, about Connecticut's smallest businesses.
Let me ask you about that. So is there, in your opinion, a business-friendly atmosphere in the Connecticut legislature? And I ask this because I was watching an interview with your boss, Joe Brennan, and he said it's a combination of a lot of things when a company makes a final decision. And I'm assuming that with what happened in this past legislative session, that you at CBIA may be a bit dismayed at the direction of the state?
I think that's accurate. You know, I don't know how you could possibly defend this last legislative session as something that was positive for small businesses in this state. You know, they did do a couple good things on the economic development front. I'm not going to deny that. There's absolutely some good things that were happening. But you have dozens and dozens of bad things. I mean, the most aggressive minimum wage increase in the state's history. You have the most generous paid family medical leave program passed that I don't know how small businesses are going to possibly comply with some of the provisions of it. We are hearing every single day from small businesses saying, are you serious? Did the legislature really enact that? How am I supposed to deal with, you know, a small shop like mine having multiple employees potentially out up to 12 weeks at a time? You know, my business just won't survive. So, you know, again, it's not that they didn't do anything positive. I would never say that. But there was just so many really harmful things done to small businesses this past session that anyone who says that this was positive just simply doesn't simply hasn't read all the bills that were passed.
Well, Eric, let me ask you this. Massachusetts, as we all know, has robust taxes, if I could use that word. It has tolls, and starting in 2021, it's going to have paid family and medical leave. Minimum wage, I believe, is going up to $15 an hour over the next few years. Now, I know that there are some in Connecticut who have said if you did this here, it's going to make, as you've kind of pointed out, it would make it much tougher for doing business in Connecticut. But if that's the case, how come Massachusetts is doing it, and they seem to be doing all right?
Well, the big difference is that Massachusetts waited till they had recovered all the jobs before they enacted a lot of these new programs, and with the exception of tolls. Obviously, they've had tolls for a while. But Massachusetts has recovered almost 400% of the jobs lost during the recession. I mean, they are booming, and that's the time when wages can increase and when you can start mandating that new benefits because businesses can afford to do those type of things because they're seeing growth. Connecticut hasn't even recovered fully from the recession yet. We still have not achieved 100% of the jobs lost. All of the other New England states are far ahead of us in terms of recovery. So when you do receive, when you do achieve full recovery, you can do these things and not have it impact the economy the way that I believe a lot of these new labor mandates and new taxes on businesses are going to impact Connecticut's economy, which is still struggling.
Eric, when you sit in your meetings at CBIA and say, look, if we had a list 1 through 10 of the top 10 things we want to do, the very first thing, what would be at the top of the list?
Well, oddly enough, I think the number one thing you could do is just leave businesses alone for a few legislative sessions. You know, when no labor mandates passed the last 2 years, two legislative sessions, when there was more balance in the legislature between the two parties, businesses were actually starting to show positive signs of growth. Things were starting to look like they had turned the corner. The number one thing is to do nothing. I do think a lot of what they're doing or attempting to do in terms of economic development, I think those things are really positive. But number one thing is just stop doing the harmful things. And I think that would go a long way.
That's interesting because, you know, I think back to what doctors, you know, first do no harm. And it's almost saying as if you're telling the legislature, just stay away. Just leave us alone for a few years.
That would be great. Honestly, I think that a lot of businesses, I think that there's going to be quite a steep impact from this last legislative session. And I have no idea what they're going to come back and try to do this upcoming session, which begins in February. The best thing they could do is leave businesses alone in terms of taxes, new labor mandates and that type of thing.
Eric, with the 2 minutes that we have left, you and I both know that Connecticut has had an image problem for years. Some TV coverage, national TV coverage that hasn't been positive, a number of articles in national magazines. How do you change the image, the outlook for the state, and how do you portray that for the national media? Because that's part of the problem. How do you bring companies here if all they're seeing are bad reports?
Yeah, that's a great point, and I know that's something that Jim Smith mentioned earlier. You know, there are a lot of great things about Connecticut. There are no question about it. We have great education institutions. We have a perfect location between two major cities. It is a wonderful place to live. It's, you know, the place that I'm happy to call home. But we got to stop having the legislature add negatives. So groups like CERC with Jim Smith and our DECD and groups like CBIA can be out there talking about positive things on a more regular basis. And I think that will go a long way. I think we had started in the past 2 years shedding a little bit of that image. But then when you have the legislature come back and talk about adding so many new taxes and so many policies that will chase out of the state our job creators, that just undoes all of the progress we made. So what we really need to happen is all these economic development agencies doing their thing out there and the legislature not making it a harder job for them to sell Connecticut as a great place to do business.
Eric Getty, Vice President for Government Affairs at CBIA, the Connecticut Business and Industry Association. Thanks, Eric. Always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Great to talk to you.
We are going to be talking now with Republican Senator Tony Huang. He's from the 28th District, which is Easton, Fairfield, Newtown, Weston, and Westport. Welcome back, Senator. How are you?
It's always great. Great.
See ya. What do you think? What do you think about the proposal?
You know, we are so focused on the UTC Raytheon and the big corporate mergers, just as we did a year ago when GE made the move out of my own town of Fairfield. But we often ignore the real tremendous cost of doing business in the state of Connecticut for small and mid-sized businesses. And when you look at the number offered from CBIA that 8,000 small businesses closed last year and only 1,000 opened up, those are really compelling and frightening numbers. I know that the big corporations give us marquee, but the real bread and butter and the engine of how this state moves is really our small and mid-sized businesses. And these numbers from 8,000 closing to 1,000 only opening up tells us that our legislative environment, our entire ecosystem, is not suitable for businesses and sustainability.
Democratic State Senate President Pro Tem Martin Looney is with us. Senator, how are you, sir?
I'm well. Thanks to an opportunity to be on.
It's our pleasure. Thanks for being with us. Your reaction to the proposed merger, please.
Well, first of all, I think the merger is another sign of changing corporate culture, meaning that large businesses like UTC or Raytheon or GE now want to be in larger cities where they get the kind of synergies that they describe of having a large number of highly skilled, concentrated workers in a single place. That's a change of the corporate culture from 40 years ago when corporations wanted leafy, pastoral, suburban locations as GE had in Fairfield. So there's a challenge for us in the fact that Connecticut does not have any large cities. Our largest city with a population of 140,000 people in Bridgeport, we have to find other ways to compete. I believe we are doing that with the passage of Senate Bill 5 this year, establishing a workforce pipeline and job creation task force, as well as a bill passed last year, a Public Act 18-178, that where we authorized a $50 million initiative supporting workforce training and pre-apprenticeship placements to place up to 10,000 individuals into good jobs in key employment sectors over the next 4 years. Also, certainly it is true that losing the corporate headquarters will mean that some high-level people will be leaving, and that will be injurious to some extent to philanthropy in Connecticut. But the workforce is committed to remain here, the production workforce, according to Mr. the director of UTC, and its many subsidiary subcontractors. So we are going to work hard to make sure that we have a strong pipeline between our high schools and the workplace and between our community and technical colleges and the workplace.
State Representative Caroline Simmons is with us for just a few moments. She probably has to step away soon for a vote. But Representative, you're a Democrat. You represent the 144th District, which is in Stamford, and you're the House Chair of the Commerce Committee. I want to get your opinion about this. Some have said that this isn't such a big deal, but others have said that the optics are bad. It just puts Connecticut in a bad light once again. Who's right?
Well, I think, well, first of all, thanks for having me. Great to be on here. And I definitely agree with the comments by the good Senator Looney. And, you know, what I think is really important is that we stay positive and we focus on the positives and all the good things that are happening in our state. I think there's so much negativity, but we have so many things we should be proud of. I think, you know, with respect to this merger, I think there are kind of broader mergers happening at the national level, and I think their decision is, you know, not really based on any state policy, and they have committed to keeping the majority of their jobs here in Connecticut. But we have a lot of other positive things happening. You know, where I represent in Stamford, we are booming. We have a number of startups and Fortune 500 companies coming to Stamford and growing and creating jobs. We've passed a number of great initiatives in the past several years. One of them, Senator Looney mentioned, to improve our workforce pipeline, but other initiatives, even in this most recent budget, to reopen our visitor welcome centers, which support our tourism industry, which supports 80,000 jobs. Things like promoting our bioscience industry, which has created over 25,000 jobs in our state. We also extended the Angel Investor Tax Credit Program, which is a crucial program to help startups access capital. And we know the majority of new jobs are created from businesses less than 5 years old, and that there are 3.6 jobs created for every angel investment. So there's a lot of great initiatives we're passing. And I think what's really important is that we as legislative leaders remain positive about our state, because you know, part of our job is to tell the story about why businesses should come and start in Connecticut, and to show the rest of the country and the world, really, that we are open for business and want to recruit and attract people and businesses here, because people are listening to what we say. And I think, you know, so often the negative stories get the press, but there's so many positive things happening that we should be proud of and touting as a state.
Senator Looney, what State Representative Simmons said was very interesting to me, because I remember sitting in a meeting, okay, now I'm going to be dating myself, back in the late 80s, early 90s, where you had some of the business leaders in Stanford, and Stanford was going through some tough times back then. And they said, this is how we envision what the city is going to look like, not next year, but they had a plan for 20, 25 years down the road. And I think Stanford has made great strides, but it took decades to make that change. And I asked that question with this in mind. The governor came out the other day and said, we need to revitalize the cities to attract businesses. But it's not an overnight process. And I'm wondering, is it just too late to do that? And if it is, what should be done now to really get things moving quickly?
Well, I think we necessarily have to keep trying to accelerate what we are doing, and it is not too late. Stanford, of course, has made great progress over those 25 years. New Haven has made great progress in recent years by capitalizing on the commercial development and expansion of research undertaken at Yale as academic research and being spun off into commercial applications in the field of biotech and internet-related services. So we now have a lot more employment in downtown New Haven, more people living in downtown New Haven than we've ever had before. So I think Stanford and New Haven are success stories in that regard. We have to devise a plan that will work equally well for Hartford and Bridgeport and the other cities. Bridgeport also has some advantages in terms of location, being as close as it is to New York City. That's one of the great advantages, obviously, for Stanford, being right on the border as it is. So we have to carefully thread the needle because, as I said earlier, we do not have a city of 500,000 people or more, and we have to find out what is going to be appealing to businesses looking to be in a location somewhat smaller. So if a company has as its kind of threshold criteria that it wants to be in New England and it wants to be in a city of 500,000 people, it has only one choice, and that's Boston. And if you're in the entire Northeast, that is including New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, as well as the six New England states, if that's your criteria, you can only be in four places: New York, Boston, Philadelphia, or Pittsburgh. So we have to pitch ourselves to a different market.
Senator Tony Huang is still with us. He's been very patient. Senator, thanks for hanging on. What would you say is the number one problem facing business in Connecticut?
Well, I applaud the optimism of my colleagues, and I also am optimistic and trying my best. But obviously, there's a disconnect, because I do believe we have tremendous challenges in our state, and it is not simply doomsday, but hopefully a recognition of the unique challenges that we have. You can't gloss over the fact that 8,000 small businesses left or close in the state. And when we talk about the challenging environment in doing business, cities and our urban centers are critical, but our laws, our policies are adversely affecting businesses and Main Street. And we did do some good things. We had a bipartisan initiative in workforce skill creation. In fact, there were over 30 bills proposed on advanced manufacturing, apprenticeship, coding, and STEM sciences. Representative Simmons talked about the bioscience initiative. But in the budget, we took half of that tax deduction for research and development. It seems that one step forward and two steps backwards in our policy. And when I talk to small businesses, the idea that we implement one of the costliest family medical leave programs in the country and create a new government entity, that is what businesses said is a environment that is unsustainable for them to, if not even to survive, to imagine growing. So I agree that we have to put up a brave front and march on. But ultimately, what we do in Hartford has a dramatic impact on facts that our state is struggling. And I don't care how you spin it, the fact of the matter is our numbers are showing that we are failing the people of Connecticut. And we need to change the policies and reflect that there is a need for balance. So I'm frustrated from the standpoint that we had an opportunity to work together, and we didn't.
Senator,
ultimately, it's a struggle.
Senator Looney, I'd like to give you a chance to respond.
Yes,
also, we heard the phone going off there. I just wanted to let you know Representative Simmons had to go, so I apologize for the phone disconnect.
Yes, I see the family medical leave thing entirely differently than Senator Wong does. And first of all, I think the adoption of that is something that will help us be competitive, since the two states that we are most often in competition with, New York and Massachusetts, on our borders, have adopted paid family and medical leave. Were we not to have done that, and Connecticut is looking for a new slogan to replace Revolutionary Connecticut, ours might have had to be, come to Connecticut. If you get sick, good luck. You're on your own. And that is not our position. That's not what we want. New York and Massachusetts are already doing that, and we need to do that to be competitive. We can't cite that as a negative. We have to cite that as a positive to attracting young workers to Connecticut with young families who are thinking about what happens when there's a family emergency. Am I going to be in a crisis? And the answer to that is there's a protection in New York. There's a protection in Massachusetts. There has to be a protection in Connecticut.
Senator Looney, let me ask you this. Should Connecticut, you mentioned before the cities, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and so on, should Connecticut even try to think about going head-to-head with any of these cities? The reason I'm asking that is because, as you pointed out, I don't think Connecticut will ever be able to match them. So shouldn't we be looking to Connecticut, be looking to differentiate itself? It shouldn't be the same old, same old. I guess I'm looking for something different, a bold strategy.
Well, that's why I think we need to maximize what we can from the academic research being done at institutions like Yale University. I think we were on the right track bringing Jackson Labs to Connecticut to engage in collaborative projects with the University of Connecticut Medical Center and also with Yale. We do continue to have a very highly educated workforce, high levels of skills. That's the sort of niche that Connecticut occupied more than 100 years ago when we had the best machinists and best tool and die makers, and workers were willing to pay more to be in Connecticut because Connecticut workers were so productive, more than the national average. In order to continue to maintain that edge, we have to invest more and more in education, in preparation for job training, technical skills, and higher education of all kinds, because if low costs were the only measure by which people judged where to locate either businesses or to live personally, Mississippi would be leading the country in all those categories. And we all know it is not. Quality of life issues come into play. Connecticut is still a leader in quality of life. And the kind of the partisan naysaying and hand-wringing underestimates that vitality that we need to continue to invest in.
Senator Wong, do you see a bold strategy?
I do, and I am optimistic, and I do agree with Senator Looney that our cities and our education system are critical for us, in part with legislative leadership and vision. That being said, I do believe we can compete. One of the big bills that we passed out of the legislature through the leadership of Senator Looney and Senator Fasano is to open up program reviews for our independent colleges, for them to be able to innovate and create curriculums that will meet the needs and the challenges in our future marketplace. So I want to applaud both of them for their incredible leadership on that. It is about cities, and it is about education that's going to lead us our way out of there. So I do believe that we can compete. When you look at New Haven, when you look at Bridgeport, when you look at Stanford, you look at Hartford, all the various towns, big cities, all they need is an opportunity to innovate and initiate, and we can compete. But that being said, we need to create an ecosystem for businesses, small businesses, mid-sized businesses, to grow and percolate, to support building up from the bottom up and not worry from the top down.
I agree with Senator Wong entirely that Senate Bill 26 on the program review for higher ed was really an important measure, because without that, higher ed initiatives by the private universities would be stymied by having to go through an unnecessarily duplicative state higher ed review in addition to the one they have to go through for their academic credentialing in the first place. So I agree that was an important bipartisan initiative that we worked on together in the state Senate and fortunately has become law. And I think that will, you know, as the senator said, help us to be more responsive by creating programs at private universities that will meet the market quickly. And as we know, many of the STEM graduates in Connecticut are actually products of the private universities in Connecticut.
Senator Looney, this is really the first of a two-part program. Tomorrow we're doing a show with David Walker, the former U.S. Comptroller General. He wrote an article the other week basically saying, goodbye, Connecticut. Here's the reason why I'm leaving. We're also having members of a Facebook group that just started and already has more than 2,000 people on it about why they want to leave Connecticut. Can I ask you to respond to those who are leaving and as to why they should stay and why they should be putting down roots here?
Well, I think you need to look at various age groups. Obviously, there are many retirees who leave because they want to be in a more warm weather climate and in some places where they think they can live more cheaply. But I think for younger people who want to build a career in Connecticut, they really should continue to give Connecticut a fair shot because we are moving in the right direction. Quality of life is extraordinary here. We have top schools, both public and private. And I think that is something that will help Connecticut to continue to market itself based on its excellence.
I know you've said quality of life a few times now. Do you believe that if they move away, that somehow, maybe in the future, they'll be back?
I think so. I think that's a possibility. I think in some cases people find out that amenities they took for granted here are not necessarily available in other places.
Senator Huang, you're going to get the last 30 seconds. What would you say to those who are thinking about leaving or have left?
I love the state of Connecticut. I believe in Connecticut. And one of the reasons both Senator Looney and I and all my colleagues serve is we want to create a better Connecticut. We may have different ideas and visions, but ultimately we're public servants. So I say to the people, be involved, offer your viewpoints, stay and make this state the great state that it is and move to the future. You know, it is a sense of community, is a sense of commitment. And I know in us working together with Senator Looney and my House colleagues, we can still do better, and we need to do better.
Senator Tony Huang, thank you, sir, as always. We appreciate your time. Senate President Martin Looney. Senator, thank you.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
Thank you.
Welcome back anytime. And a little bit early in the program, we heard from Representative Caroline Simmons from Stamford. Unfortunately, she had to leave to take care of a vote, and we'll get her back sometime in the future. That's going to do it for our show today. Joelle Schrock is our engineer. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Our associate producers are Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari. J.D. Allen is the producer. Ann Lopez is the senior producer. And Terry Sheridan is our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to you for being part of The Full Story.